Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Writing the Rapids, the show where I, Joe Bilecki, talk to writers about writing. Very often, those writers have been recommended to me by writers who have previously been on the show. In the case of this month's guest, Callie Peed, she was recommended to me by Paul Cunningham. So if you like this episode, go back and listen to my episodes with him. And if you liked those, make sure you stick around for this one. Callie Peed is a queer writer from Salt Lake City, Utah, with a particular love of poetry, essays, and computer programming. She graduated in 2023 with an MFA in creative writing from the University of Notre Dame. Her work can be found in publications including the Southern Review of Books, Shenandoah, Folio, and the Martello, and we're largely talking about her book Today, Aries, which is out from White Stag Press. If you would like to support the show, you can do so in a couple of different ways. For just $2 a month, you can join my Patreon, patreon.com/noisemakerjoe. You get these episodes a little bit earlier than everybody else. You can throw a one-time donation to me over at paypal.me/noisemakerjoe. You can buy my book. It's called Tired. It's on Amazon. Or don't spend any money and just talk about it to people who you think would like it. That helps the show very well, too. Leave a comment where you can like and subscribe, all that good stuff. And now let's get into my conversation with Callie. Let's start with the title. I don't normally start with the title. Today, Aries. Why that title?
Yeah, that's a really good question. When I was writing the first iteration of the poems that would become the collection, I wasn't naming them, and by that point I had landed on this idea of nostalgia from this very specific period of time in my life. And so I just kept thinking back on that, and it had a lot to do with this idea of tarot and being, you know, in your mid-20s and having the whole world kind of at your fingertips, but no way to grasp it. And I am an Aries. I was born in April. So I just kept coming back to this idea of, it just felt like everything that was going on in my life at that time was so in moment. Like everything felt so like necessary, like it just needed to happen right then and there. And so something about those two things just really spoke to me about this idea of acting now, like having this be in moment and constantly in the moment, not something necessarily in the past or in the future, but just bringing back this nostalgia to now, which is where I landed on the Today Aries concept. And also this idea of, you know, just horoscopes. And when you pick it up today, it is going to feel different than if you pick it up tomorrow. So that's where this name kind of came together. And originally the whole collection of fragments that I was putting together were Today Aries with a number just from 1993 when I was born until 2023 is when I started working seriously on the collection. So, those name titles kind of disappeared over time because they didn't seem to fit as much, but the big title, you know, seemed to be the best fit at the end of the day.
Okay, cool. And so you said one of my trigger words, which is nostalgia. So like a deer or like a dog, my ears have perked. I also really like what you said about how at that point in your 20s, it seems like everything's kind of there. But also you have this inability. My 20s were so weird with jobs and with whatever, that I feel that very strongly. What is your relationship with nostalgia, especially like within the sort of current moment where nostalgia is kind of big, both like aesthetically, consumer wise, and also with like the whole Iran stuff that everyone will have forgotten about in a couple of days when this comes out anyway, but like, you know, we're joking about it being 2003 again and, that sort of thing. So where are you kind of at with the concept of nostalgia?
Nostalgia. Yeah. To me, feel like I'm always in this fraught relationship with nostalgia because I have such hindsight bias, I feel, in my own life with my own actions and decisions that occasionally the nostalgia that peaks is so almost overwhelming. And it's not ever really necessarily this feeling of like wanting to go back and being in that place again, because I don't know if anyone could pay me to go back and relive my early 20s again. Maybe if I had the ability to do a couple things differently, but if I knew I was going to end up doing the exact same things, not sure I'd do it. So I have this like fraught relationship with nostalgia, but there's always things that keep coming back around in my life, and I've learned to just accept those. Now, unfortunately, the current, state of the world that we're in, there's a lot that keeps coming back around, which is weird as someone who's now in their 30s, right? Because the first time I was really conscious and aware of some of the things that were happening just in the world overall, I was young enough that I couldn't comprehend, right? I knew the bigger picture, and now I feel like there's this darker nostalgia almost that can just kind of circle and be tumultuous. And with technology developing the way it is, I feel like it's moving faster than ever. So that nostalgia is equally at my fingertips, but it is just like a bullet train through my body. Some days it feels like it's there and then gone so quickly. And it's become this very both positive and negative thing, just depending on kind of the circumstances. But yes, I don't, nostalgia is a weird thing for me, I guess. I don't know how other people feel about it.
Yeah, I feel like you're closer to where I'm at with it than other people. Because I'll find, I don't know, I find I'm a Libra. I find I'm kind of like in the middle with it. I definitely have interacted with people who see nostalgia and treat it as a sort of trap. And then clearly, with the internet, there are other people who are like really, really into it, make a whole personal brand out of it. Neil Cicerega, I watched a talk that he did years ago at this point where he was talking about like, let's do more nostalgia. Like, you should constantly be chasing that. And I kind of see it as a person who's been off alcohol for like 7 or 8 years now. I see it as a sort of drug akin to alcohol, where it's like a little bit at the end of the day, a little bit of Tumblr to look at like what my computer room might have looked like 20 years ago, and then I gotta be done, right? I can't start my day with listening to Hybrid Theory. I can't, it's a terrible idea. It'll ruin a whole Tuesday. But I also, especially with the sort of cyclical nature of nostalgia, with the cycle getting tighter is interesting, and then like overlapping, right? Because it's not it feels like there was a time maybe 10 years ago where everyone was like into the 80s. Right, the 2010s was very 80s revival, and that made sense because it's a 30-year cycle. And you can see a little bit of it now, like there is a 90s revival, but we're also getting this aughts revival, and I'm seeing probably Zoomers really into this 2010s sort of thing. I'm seeing that creep up, and then also people are going further back. Maybe it's just because I watch Bernadette Banner videos on YouTube, and so my algorithm's messed up, but I'm seeing people go way back and then like fill it in. And within that, I'm seeing not just a nostalgia for that time, but kind of like the hauntological, like, let's think about how the 90s thought about the future. I want the 90s future, or I want mid-century medieval revivalism. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite genres of music is horror punk. And I really like that because it's like the aughts doing the 80s, doing the 50s.
Yeah.
I'm experiencing it in the 20s. So I'm getting like a quadruple nostalgia with every single punk song about the Wolfman.
Yeah.
But again, like that's like a really sticky trap if you're not using it like just for what am I looking at, what I'm going to look for when I go to Goodwill or whatever, or what kind of mood boards do I want on my Tumblr that has no, you know, where I don't look at text posts or anything like right. that. That's where I'm at with it. Like I'm trying desperately to hold on to nostalgia without letting it become a means of completely tuning out the now.
Yeah. I feel like this really weird thing happened in my life when about the time the Free Britney movement became really big on social media, because I feel like that was such a moment where we were seeing this person who, at least in my life, you know, has this connection to nostalgia. I remember being in my best friend's basement when we were like 7 years old and listening to a Britney Spears album and coming up with choreography. And so it had this really kind of tender, fun nostalgia to just the concept of Britney Spears music. And then it's coming back with this edge of, wow, look at what's being exposed with how, you know, this person, this human has been treated. And then we have moments like the Barbie movie. When that came out, there was this huge push of nostalgia I felt in my body in this way that was almost healing, which was kind of the opposite effect of what was happening with Free Britney. So nostalgia is just such an interesting thing. I liked that you said sticky, because I think I agree with that, that nostalgia can become a sticking point in your life. Because I think nostalgia for me is effective when I have let go of that thing, right? I no longer have a Furby, so if I see a Furby, it, you know, makes me giggle or whatnot. Or I don't buy the Lisa Frank notebooks anymore. So when the Lisa Frank documentary came out, it was this nostalgic moment, but also I wasn't like so torn and intertwined with this new knowledge of how these companies or corporations were, you know, being run. So yeah, nostalgia is being sticky. I think that's really a good, and this idea of, you know, having it in small doses, keeping it in small doses, like under control, not letting it get out of hand. I do think it's interesting that we are even having very hyper specific, you know, decade nostalgia with content creators now who are making, you know, they just dress in clothes from like the 1910s or 20s because that's what they like to show off. They've got all these vintage pieces, right? So I get, and I think part of me has a hard time separating nostalgia and vintage too. Like what's the difference between those two things, looking at like ephemeral pieces in particular, I think.
Yeah. The other thing for me too that I try to use when I'm exploring nostalgia, like within myself, as I try to use it as an expansion of my childhood. I've used the term like self-mythologization, self, I'm not even going to try to, you know what I'm talking about.
I got you.
where it's like, I know that I was like scene weeb adjacent. Like there are people who definitely were hanging out in the mall, in the manga section at Barnes and Noble after going to Hot Topic. I didn't have that exact experience, but it's close enough to mine that I'm going to just like pretend for half an hour that I'm reminiscing on that. And then, you know, so on and so forth. Right. So like, I also find too, that as I get older and some of the, I had this very like rigid kind of lowercase c conservative modernist view of a lot of things as a kid, where it was like, oh, singers aren't supposed to sound like this, or metal music with clean vocals isn't metal music, or that sort of thing, that as a kid at the time locked me into certain pathways and out of others. And now that I'm in my 30s and much more chill about things, I can go back and listen to, I don't know, Paramore and just be like, no, this is fine. This is actually great. Yeah. And fun. And not like, I don't know, it's hard for me to listen to music with a girl singer because I can't sing along with it as well. Like, whatever the dumb things that 14-year-old me would have said right. that made sense at the time, now I can say, okay, yeah, fine. Like, Attack is not great, but there's no reason for me to be that angry about Attack at the time. And so on and so forth. So, yeah, cool. I want to move into the poetry book.
Yeah.
I'm looking at my notes. I kind of want to talk about Persephone. I'd have, similarly with nostalgia, I have like an interesting relationship with the contemporary conceptions of her. And yeah. She appears throughout the book. So I would like to hear your thoughts and feelings on the image of Persephone.
Yeah, I think, oh man, that it was so trippy when I was writing these, because Persephone didn't make the cut until very close to when I had this manuscript finished, actually. Mm-hmm. Persephone had always just been a you stand-in, but as I was going through these poems, they also were written almost exclusively in second person, without any sort of indication of anything but a you speaker. And I just felt like every time I was going through them, I could feel this two kind of fold conversation going on. And so that's when I decided to make the move to put Persephone in. And it was actually my editor who suggested, you know, returning back to the I, because there had been some moments where I put the I back in and it was just flowing so much better. So the Persephone image just kind of actually bloomed from all the other imagery that was already happening. So it was almost this reverse where I had all of this pomegranate imagery. I had all of this really kind of, or feels to me to be mythological in scope. Not to say that I created a myth, but just the idea that in one moment we're intimately in a bedroom and the next minute someone is consuming the world. I mean, just that kind of scope and scale and how much it was fluctuating. And I'm really interested when, you know, people take the myths and reimagine those in contemporary times, or maybe closer to what a real life scenario could have been, and just taking those like myths and characters and creatures and putting them in other places. So Persephone just became the natural fit because of the imagery that was happening. And once that Persephone name got put back in the book, everything clicked with the back and forth, where Persephone was, where she wasn't. And I wanted to use Persephone because I did feel like it had this, you know, she has this kind of draw for me in a way of always like never being able to grasp, whether that's, you know, her descent into Hades or returning, or this idea of a perpetual like changing of the seasons. There's just something that's so unreachable that I think I was trying to pull closer just by getting her on paper. So yeah, this is a wild time in my writing. This doesn't happen very often where the imagery like begets the myth, I guess I would say.
Yeah, that's interesting that she like coalesced out of it rather than having it built around her. Contextually for me, I have because of like the nostalgia stuff that we talked about and like the hyper specific aesthetics, the sort of images I like to look at on Tumblr or Pinterest or whatever kind of tend to lead me into this like sapphic mythopoetic space.
Yeah.
or like I'll be looking at something and then there'll just be like, man, I wish I could live in a field with no men. And I'm like, where am I on the internet right now? Like I've accidentally stumbled into a place I don't belong. And it's just because my wife got me into Whimsigoth, and I like velvet curtains. I like looking at images of comfy couches, comfy purple couches, and every once in a while that leads me into places where they don't like me to be there. Within that, I see references to her kind of every now and again, and I've learned for my own mental health not to dig too deep into certain forms of expression on the internet. Sometimes things just don't concern me and I don't need to be there. But I'll see her as like this like heroic feminist figure or like a tragic feminist figure. And my biggest entry into Greek myth was the Mythomania series, which were like middle grade books that I read in elementary school that were Hades is the protagonist, Zeus is a spoiled man-child, and so all of these major mythological stories that you know, Perseus and Hercules and Medusa and whatever, like, are retold with Hades sort of behind the scenes fixing things that Zeus is messing up. And I remember really enjoying the book Hold the Phone Persephone, where like she wants to be with him and Hera is like this overbearing sort of like Italian mother where she's like, you can't go down there and hang out with that boy sort of thing. And obviously those middle grade books were not any sort of historical source on how the Greek people felt about that story, but I kind of feel like most people aren't in touch with that anyway. But like, so in my brain, it's a love story that's kind of tragic because she can't be with him the whole time. But I'll see other people kind of talking about how she was like stolen. And some people talk about how she was stolen from him, and some people are talking about how he stole her. And obviously it's, you know, religious folklore, so that's thousands of years old, so there's really no way of saying what it really is. Right. But she has, like, since been this interesting figure, and then just sort of within my own life, I'm, you know, black t-shirt, gothy sort of guy, and my wife has butterflies on every t-shirt that she owns. So, like, the aesthetic is there, too, where, again, I'm sympathetic to Hades because I took the little fairy princess. That's anytime that she pops up in something I read, I'm always trying hard to clue in on how she's being called upon to sort of deepen my understanding of why she is invoked so much. And
it is one of those, I feel like you do see Persephone in a lot, and it comes down to the same arguments you're talking about, right? Whether was she taken? Did she want to be there? Who's she being taken from? And I think the biggest thing for me is just, it doesn't matter which story you're really telling, there's such a loss of agency for Persephone. Whether she wanted to be there or not, there's just this loss of agency for her. And I think I clued into that when I was a kid a little bit, when we were kind of going broadly over the Greek myths. There's a TV show that came out, man, I don't even know when, if I'm being honest, because I spotted it on Netflix one day and just binge watched it. I think it's called Kronos with Jeff Goldblum, where it's like a reimagining of Olympia. And it's very kind of interesting, and like we're in modern times, but with these very not modern myths of the gods. And Jeff Goldblum plays this very spoiled, like Zeus kind of character. And so it's just interesting to see how these myths become centered. I think Medusa has been another one that's come up so often recently with, you know, what are the true origins of Medusa's situation? Like, was this a curse or was this a blessing to get back at men? So I think those conversations are really interesting that people are having. And it just makes me curious as to why, this is one of those things I don't think I'll ever figure out, like why we turn back to myth to have conversations we're probably just trying to have about today and like how we're feeling in a contemporary space. Like, you know, people spend their whole lives studying the idea of mythology and why it's so pertinent in our lives now. And so it's just interesting to, you know, see where and when these images are evoked, for sure. And I like trying to decipher that, like, okay, what contemporary conversation are we really having? And a lot of them are so straightforward, right? Like, no questions asked. I know why we're talking about this, but some other times I think it's just an interesting, you know, people taking stances on either of those. It's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think so too. There's a whole other layer too that gets added on to it when, for me, I find contemporary paganism fascinating. And it was wild to me to realize probably a decade ago now that like there are people in Greece who are unironically, wholeheartedly worshiping these gods still. And it, you know, the idea of cultural appropriation has been weaponized to hell and back. But like the idea that you could just be like, you know, guys, like this is like a real cultural figure that is important to, I don't know, thousands of people probably, and not necessarily a pawn in whatever sort of allegory you're trying to say. But that,
yeah.
I also feel like that to bring that up, especially within this discussion, I'm still thinking about Tumblr. To bring that up on Tumblr is like the most Tumblr thing to do. Listen, too.
I loved Tumblr. I was a huge Tumblr. Like, I loved Tumblr. It was this place where you could be not yourself. Like, it felt like the safe dark side of the internet for me, because I was raised in a very conservative Mormon household, and I'm not that way anymore, but like, right. I think Tumblr was this almost escape, and you see so much of this on Tumblr, right? From the conversations, also just the aesthetics, like you can see an image and you know exactly that someone was trying to evoke this idea of Persephone without even saying that, right? So I find this draw to the aesthetics, like the visual aesthetics, really interesting. And I, you know, feel connected to that in a way, just because I think that's exactly what happened when I was writing Today Aries. And when Persephone came back, it was like, aesthetically, I just don't think there's any other place I can land with this. It almost felt not like I owed Persephone that moment, but it would feel so unnatural not to have it there that I would just think about it for the rest of forever. And that is not something I want to have to think about with this first book. So,
right. Yeah. I was on it way back in college, largely for political stuff, which did a lot of good for me and did a lot of bad for me. And I'm back on it now, It's basically my like alt social media account that has nothing to do with me or anything. And it's really just there for me to look at mood boards. It is really just a nostalgia break. I asked on Blue Sky, like, are people still using Tumblr or whatever? And a guy I knew was like, it is the only social media I use that doesn't bring me stress ever. And like, yeah, as long as you're using it right, like I'm very selective of the blogs I follow. I'm like, if there's any text posts, if there's mm-hmm. any asks, if there's anything but you just posting images, I'm not going to follow you.
Yeah, I'm out.
because I don't want to. And every once in a while I'll see something, or like the For You tab will bring me something and I'll start reading it and I'll start feeling a certain type of way. And I'll say, no, this is not what this place is for.
Yeah.
And I move on. And again, that's probably because I'm older, I'm more mature, I don't have infinite time to just sit on the computer and scroll. I've got people to take care of in my life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I condone in the year 2025, get a Tumblr account, use it correctly, and it is a wonderful break.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back to Tumblr. I miss Tumblr aesthetics.
Yeah, it's delightful. I'm a huge fan, and every once in a while I'll just go and I'll see like what the trending things are, and it's like Danny Phantom DC Universe crossover fic, and I'm just like, hell yeah, good job. Yeah, 14-year-olds. I'm not gonna spend any more time on it than just enough to know, to figure out barely what's going on, and then I'm dipping out, because I don't have the time. But hell yeah, good for you kids.
Yeah.
It's delightful. It's so much better than, you know, the social media that I keep for work, for posting these podcast episodes.
I was hoping seeing that online.
I guess we need to talk about tarot. It seems like it would be quite the oversight if we didn't talk about tarot. Let's talk about the generator, as well. You have the Today Aries tarot poem fragment generator.
Yeah.
that within the book, there is a QR code that leads you to it. Talk about the generator.
Yeah. So the generator was a last minute inspiration. I went to a workshop with Allison Parrish, who does amazing work in the digital space as a poet. And this was when I was in my MFA program in South Bend. So I knew Allison Parrish's work, but I hadn't really dug into who Allison Parrish was as a person. And when I saw her bio, I realized we grew up in the same city, all the way back in Utah. Crazy to me. It had that nostalgia click. I was like, oh, this poet who I love her work and what she does online and these things I never thought I could do as far as digital work goes, also grew up in the same city as me. That's crazy. So I go to this workshop that Allison was doing. I'd been invited by a professor of mine at the time, and it was me and a bunch of undergrads, which felt interesting, but I was just going to ride it out. And she taught everyone in less than an hour how to make like a tweet generator. Now, this was back before the downfall of Twitter, in my opinion. But I was so obsessed with this idea of this tweet generator. And I think I went home and I made one that was a little more intense. I honestly cannot even tell you what that generator did. It's like the same sentence and some things flip out and it generates on the hour, every hour. And I think it probably still exists, but I can't remember the name of it. I made a Twitter account, can't log back into it. So it could be out there still generating poetry for all I know, or these fragments. But when she taught us how to do that, I realized that this was something I was so interested in, just this idea of constant kind of generation, or the ability to generate, that I then dedicated the next 7 months to learn how to code this one very specific thing. By that point, I'd been writing these Today Aries poems, which essentially I would, I was getting more into like practice poetry. So ritualistic poetry, doing this thing every day because it was the only thing that was keeping me writing. And I was like, I have a thesis I need to finish, so I got to be doing something. And I would do a 3-card tarot spread for myself. And instead of, you know, like, oh, I'm reading this tarot spread, I would just go into the definition of the card as it is and start doing erasure poetry and kind of feeling that out. But there was this really beautiful moment for me that happened doing that, where the nostalgia came back in. I remembered being, again, in my 20s in this house I was renting with this constant, like, rotating group of friends and roommates. I was never in that house by myself, which is a rare thing, I think. And it didn't matter who was coming or going, but we had this, everyone was kind of in our witchy phase of life. And so tarot was just a constant thing, right? And you're doing tarot readings for your friends, but you don't really understand how tarot works. And then 3 days later, you're wondering if you've messed with the universe too much and that friend's life is going to collapse, you know, like, and so it was this very like connecting thing for everyone coming through, but it was also so sporadic and random. And I realized in doing this ritual that one thing I've always loved about poetry is the ability to have it be communal. And so I set a new goal with the generator and this collection of, you know, you talk in poetry classes about the relationship between the poem and the reader, or the reader and the writer, just be through the lens of the poetry. And I wanted to close that gap as much as possible. There was a line that I don't think made it into the collection. You'd think I would know that, but I'm pretty sure I cut it out. That essentially was saying, like, I want to reach across the kitchen table and grab your hands and like have this moment with you. And up until I went to that workshop with Allison Parrish, I didn't know how I was going to do that. I knew that I was doing this ritualistic poem, poetry, and it would build up at some point. And so after that workshop, I just started writing down every fragment I made. And instead of doing, you know, multiple poems with the different, like making different fragments for each card, once I made a fragment for the card, I just kept it. And thought that the best way I could have this communal poetry with a reader would be the generator online. And generator is such a, I feel like, the right and the wrong word, because it is generating something for you, but really it's randomizing. I think that's closer to what I hope to express, especially with where things are going with AI. I think people hear generator and they automatically go to AI. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, this is, I just wrote 100 and however many fragments for, you know, one for each position of a tarot card and put it in this computer program that I wrote that we'll just pull 3 of them for you. And I played around with the idea of like titling those cards so that you would know as, you know, as a reader of the generator, what cards you drew. But at the same time, I was stuck on the nostalgia of doing tarot for the first like year of my life, when I was doing it, or started doing tarot for the first year, and really not knowing what I was doing, and still having this, you know, the meaning is what you make it. So in for the generator, the card really doesn't matter. But I've always been interested in poetry fragmentation and how small can we break things down and rearrange a poem and have it still be the poem it was to begin with. So this was just a really nice way for me to kind of combine succinctly all of these ideas into one place and have it just exist in the world.
Cool. I love that. I also had a Twitter bot back in the day. I had Body Horror Bot. I'm sure no one remembers Body Horror Bot because it never really took off. But yeah, like it was, you know, pronoun, senses, body part, verb. You know? So it's like he smells your arm turning into a lump of goo or whatever. And it would just every hour, something like that.
I love that.
And yeah, it was super fun. It was the same thing where I kind of like found something online and then made a Google spreadsheet during a slow night at work and then put the account. I feel like there's somebody on Blue Sky right now who has the means of helping people get bots like that going on Blue Sky. So maybe I should resurrect the Body Horror Bot, because I do think at some point those accounts did get frozen on Twitter. And I feel like it was really early on. I feel like it was even before the name change, because Musk was like mad that those counted as users. And so he was claiming that he had been misled about how many active users there were. I just made a face for the, this is an audio podcast. I just made a face. You can imagine what face I made. So I remember it stopping and being like, I should do something with this. And then I never did, how most of my artistic projects go. but I really enjoy using pulling cards. Part of me feels like they're kind of ekphrastic. I have more tarot knowledge than maybe your average white man, but less than someone who like knows how to do tarot. And so there are definitely some that largely because I get a lot of the same ones during my daily pulls. I get a lot of wands, get a lot of major arcana. Nobody tell me what that means, really. I'm imagining it's fine. And I'll read one of the fragments and I'll be like, I think I know what card that is. But also just like as poems, they're nice. They're nice poems. I guess this goes into another one of my bullet points here that I had, but there's like a density of language both in that I noticed in the book, like alliteration and consonants, like a really sort of like I don't know exactly how to put it. But like, I don't know. It seems like you put in as much care into the like the texture of the language as you did the meaning of the language, which is a thing that I really appreciate as a person who, when he does write poetry, it is more influenced by like rap music than I don't know. Insert, I don't know, William Blake or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. I try to get my students when I'm teaching creative writing classes to come away from William Blake and go closer to rap. Thanks for noticing that. I think that's funny to me in like a hindsight way, because one of the first things of feedback I got in the first round of poems I did was, man, there's really not a lot of concrete language in this. And I was thinking, yeah, it's kind of the point, because it's, you know, it's tarot and it's so abstract anyway. But that was one piece of feedback that I took and ran with pretty heavily, which there are definitely some of those fragments on that generator that I think if you have even, you know, ruffled through a tarot deck a couple of times, you'd pick out, because they did become more ekphrastic to what the Rider-Waite kind of tarot decks look like visually, which is also where some of these characters, I mean, Persephone is there, but there's a knight who shows up at some point, and like that's 100%, you know, because that was a visual from the card. And the more I wrote the fragments, the more it became having to take the meaning of something and put that into a visual form, which was interesting because, again, it did create a lot of those cards or card fragments for the generator that I think you could notice. You would know kind of which one. I think death is probably the most apparent, because in the death cards it says death, which I don't use a lot in the rest of the fragments. So, but yeah, the image of the card itself kind of became pretty important in the generator itself. I messed around with the idea of making a connect the fragment to like a quiz, you know, which fragment goes with which tarot card, and which you would know it was reversed, but you know, can you put the two fragments together based on whatever? But that feels more like a fun game for me after I've written all these fragments, right? Like, okay, test my own knowledge. Do I even remember what cards these were if I took the names off of them? Yeah, and I there was something about the language in this specific collection that just felt like it needed to be kind of abrasive and sharp. And part of that might come from this idea of everything feeling so immediate when I was at that age in my life, and like it kind of did feel like walking on that edge all the time. With any decision, it just felt like it was so sharp and poignant that there was like something in this language that just felt like it needed to be a little sharper, a little more abrasive.
Yeah, I feel that. I found that I think I was right kind of in that same mode as I was reading, because a lot of the imagery is really nice, like nice to imagine what it is, like white lilies wrap around mountain peaks, a blueprint for light. It's such a sick stanza. Like I love that one. I've come back to it so much. It's so good. I love kind of imagining what that is. And then that poem ends with death shows the messenger a white horse, which again, kind of like, you know, that's a big ass period for a poem.
Yeah. Yeah. Death showed up in these in places where I wasn't expecting. Like there just would be these moments where I'd draw the death card, and that is always scary. There's that refrain of it doesn't mean what you think that happens in the book. And I think that just anytime death would land in that three card spread, I'd be like, I know, even now I know that doesn't mean what you think it does, but there was just no way to get away from that imagery, right? Like this is a mixture of tarot, and there's a lot of horses that happen in this collection too. The horse just keeps coming back around, death keeps coming back around. I feel like all of my kind of hidden niches when I was a kid just came through with this, like, don't tell anyone I wanted to be a horse girl, but I never was, you know. So I spent a lot of time with the images. I think when I write, I see things as like a film first. In my head, I've always been that way as a writer. I love film and television and the visuals of that and this idea of visual aesthetics. So it takes a while, but eventually I get to that point where I can put in words that exact visual that I'm seeing in my head. So I'm glad to hear that that came through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very visual collection for me. A lot of the poetry that I've been working on has been, I guess has always been, narrative or like philosophical, like interrogating. I feel like a lot of my friends has been too. We're like, even if what's being communicated isn't like a concrete idea, like stop cutting down so many trees, please, or whatever, is very kind of like targeted, capital A, about something. So this collection was a nice reminder that, like, oh yes, poetry doesn't have to be centered around the I. It doesn't have to be centered around the you. It can be, you know, more ethereal. I appreciate, because that might help me later get away from getting stuck in certain modes of working. But also just like, yes, that's nice to read. I tell my friends all the time that my favorite poets are old crusty white guys who write poems about like barns. Mm-hmm. Or like, there's a B.H. Fairchild book that starts with a poem about a welder. And my friends are like, I can't stand that. And I'm like, just give me an old man on a porch. And he's like thinking about that cow in the distance, like for whatever reason that speaks to my soul so clearly, that it's nice to read things that aren't that, because I'm an enjoyment enjoyer. So it's always like whenever I get something, even if it's not like new, just kind of like away from what I've been stuck in, it's like, ah, yes, that's right. Like the world is big and beautiful. It kind of sounds like within, and I guess maybe just because tarot is the sort of basis of a lot of this work that we're talking about, that like chance is a big thing. And when I was a kid, I was really into surrealist painting. It was like the thing of, if I was going to become a painter, it was going to be because of Dali, right?
Right.
And so this idea of randomness or chance has always been enticing to me. And I think maybe that's why I can't bring myself to be belligerently opposed to AI. Like, yeah. I'm opposed to AI. But I'm opposed to AI because I'm opposed to capitalism and environmental collapse. Like, I was really excited about it when it was really janky.
Right. Yeah.
And obviously we can't divorce the fact that it's like giving people bad medical advice and like causing a wave of spiritual psychosis, the likes we have never seen. Mm-hmm. Tons of bad stuff. But like, man, does the idea of a wonky, janky word, you know, bingo ball spitter outer, like really appeal to me, especially with like the early images that were all cursed. They were all weird. They were all felt broken, aside from this now what we have of like just like everything is in the uncanny valley. Like, mm-hmm. it's a AI generated picture of toast coming out of a toaster, and it makes me feel sick to my stomach just for whatever reason. Like, that's how I know that an image is AI generated, is if it makes me nauseous, it's probably not real. But yeah, like I love the idea of randomness and chance, feels like play to me. And the idea that you can take tarot really appeals to me because it's this applied randomness.
Yeah.
Where there are interpretations, there are rules, but they don't really matter unless you want them to. And so, like, as an artist, using that feels really liberating because it is just, it's like a weak magnet for your imagination, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of tugging you in a direction. So I, you know, you said you were using that as like a daily practice to keep yourself writing. Was the reasoning behind it kind of anywhere in the neighborhood of what I was saying, or was it something completely different?
Yeah, I think it was, because I was working on this kind of right when AI became a little more solidified, but we were still getting all of this really uncanny, right? Like, you're looking at an image that seems so nice and bright, and there's two people walking together, and all of a sudden you're like, where, there's like an extra arm wrapping around someone's shoulder, and that feels scary, you know?
Yeah.
Like, which, growing up, I was a really big, and I still am, I'm a big horror fan. Like, I love horror movies, I love the thriller genre, I mean, I just love all of that, and the campier the better for me. Like, most people's least favorite recent horror movies are some of my favorite, because I like this idea of digging back into a really intense camp. But I digress. There was this sort of uncontrol, I guess I'll say, giving up that control in my own writing practice opened up the door for things that I wouldn't have found otherwise. When I was writing these fragments and working on this specific manuscript, I was also playing around with the idea of like other interactive forms. So I had, this is all like poetry on the side, and some of it's been published other places, but there was one day where I used like a pendulum and a yes, no, maybe, ask again decider chart, and had rules for like, okay, every, I'm going to write, and then every minute and a half, I'm going to have this pendulum push me one direction. If it says yes, I'm going to go this way. If it says no, I'm going to go another way, or do very specific things. I had a line that would repeat every time maybe was there. And it really pushed this poem into a visual place that feels uncanny in a way, but also the idea, the like loss of control kind of created that uncanny feeling for me. Just that almost like there's a hand on the back of your shoulder. I wrote another one about, I don't know if you remember Miracle Fish. It's like that red plastic fish you'd put in your hand and it would curl up, and that was supposed to tell you, you know, something about your future, your current state. And it was mixed in with a collection in a workshop of these Today Aries pieces, and someone made a comment about how there just was like a darkness behind that poem that they couldn't put their finger on. And they were like, I just, the idea of like the miracle fish in general, having that in your hand. And I thought I was helping by saying, you know, like, oh, it's a body temperature thing. It's a gimmick, you know, it's not, but who, but also who am I to say to someone that that's what it is? Like, I did a, I called them cootie catcher. I don't know regionally what they would have been called here, but you like fold the paper into multiple triangles and then you can open it different ways and write on all of the different tabs and like play games with your friends. So there are poems like that. I just was in this phase of giving up control and letting that kind of guide the work. And I think people who do a lot of like somatic sort of poetry rituals have different connections to this kind of ritualistic practice than I do. And I really admire them for that. I think there's like places I could never get to if with somatic poetry that other people can get to, for sure. But It just, like, there was something about, I'm writing the poem. I know I'm writing the poem, but chance intervened. There was something else, even if that something else is just randomness, that pushed this somewhere that I wasn't planning on when I started, because that's how randomness works, right? And I like that idea that there's something else, there's something more involved in the process than just me and what I would consider my own kind of creativity. But yeah, I could feel sometimes when that so-called third arm would start to kind of encroach upon the poem, and I really tried to ride that wave when I could. I think we kind of cut it back to more of this nostalgic vibe and good old early 2000s, but there is just something in poetry in general that I always feel there's just little fingers creeping in, and kind of guiding poets. So trying to combine that, like, classic, let's get really heavy in the imagery, but have that, there's something else going on beneath the surface, always bubbling. These are selections from my collection of poetry called Today, Aries. It is a collection of poems that come from poem fragments written based off of tarot cards, both visually and readings. So there's two different sections of the book, and I'm going to do a little bit from each section. The first selection is from part one, which is Persephone slices the deck, a card is returned. Death, a placated fear, chanting over and over. It doesn't mean what you think it does. It doesn't mean what you think it doesn't mean what you think you mean. I am 23 years old, fabricated and frayed at my kitchen table, asking again and again. We play again, as if the future is a game until there are no cards left. And the incense has long since burned. Only stagnant air remains. Friends sleeping near our feet, bodies wrapped together, wreathing around those of us who can't stop again. I'm fragmenting my past, present, and future, myself, as we begin ripping the deck, staring at the spreads, unseeming, three cards laid out before us, our fingernails splitting image and meaning. We are upright, reversed, player and the played, pulled to pieces, shuffled beginnings, our middles, our ends, are the tablecloths and placemats strewn out before us. I speak, and it is pouring from the horizon. Choose which skeletons are marrowed in its meaning. All that's left is greed, gold consumed, bad bets, and I'm bitter. The symptoms, swords, shuffling, suffering, syndrome. Success is sliced secrets, the stress of repetition reversed. A letter, Persephone, in so many forms, evading me. I'll meet her in the temple of decay. We must make meaning from what we've created. Reversed, the chaos will not be controlled. Veiled being, this animal of experience, strangers on the horizon, the sun resisting rotation, Queen C cups the angles of your body, bright blue, reflected between ocean and sky, she speaks. This next selection is from the second part of the collection, titled Persephone Shuffles the Deck, Awakens an Array. This is the part of the collection that was mostly created by putting these fragments into the Today Aries generator and seeing what came out of it. So some fragments were deleted in the editing process, but overall, they remained pretty whole. Wrapped between land and sea, she drinks the sky, the pool rivulets split, earthed by a barren vessel. She holds herself against dry vastness, sprouting young green. Leaves become focal, shading in terrestrial hues, the mountaintops lifting from the spine, an altered background now, landscape on a page. You approach the sea, a wreckage is born, draped in wreaths of seaweed and sun, light collapsing against stone, the riptide beats it back. My body, the open sea, frightened sky. The world erupts from within. Volcanoes, the hills, bluebirds beating their wings to the shocks and surges of a heart. Look closely. You are linked between the human and the garden. Chain wings keep you here. Poet, curious mind. Between the decks are endings. You pretend to understand these floral waves. Let go. Nature is flowing. She blooms in harvest fields near flower hills, grassy streams. She is sweetened windfall. You lose yourself within this night, industrial noise slipping through the cracks. She speaks, and it is pouring from the horizon.